out will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big pecker. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we're going to have part two of our interview with Tom Terwilliger, Tony Pearson, and Phil Williams. We had part one last week, and I talked to all three of these guys about a variety of subjects. And so today, we are going to have part two, and we're going to talk about some more stuff, including Tony Pearson competing in the mixed pairs competition. And we're also going to talk about Matt Mendenhall, who passed away last fall. And also we'll talk about all the guys' first contests and their experiences doing their very first contest. So we're going to have another lively discussion with Phil and Tony and Tom. And I really enjoyed talking to these guys. We had them on last year, and it was great getting them back together. So that'll be coming up in a minute. When we get done with our interview, I am going to read another old article. This one comes from the March 1986 issue of Dan Lowry's Muscle Training Illustrated, and it's about one of our guests, Phil Williams. Phil won the 1985 MPC Nationals. So this article is called Phil Williams, King of 1985, and it's kind of a profile piece on Phil after he won the MPC Nationals. So that will be interesting. And I'm also going to read an article by Lisa Lyon. We talked about Lisa in last week's show. And this one is called Why She Likes Bodybuilders. So I'm going to read both of those articles when we get done with our interview with Phil Williams, Tony Pearson, and Tom Terwilliger. All right. So we got some more bad news again in the bodybuilding world. It seems like this happens every other week or every month. This one was a real shocker. Cedric McMillan passed away at 44 years old. Cedric was one of the top bodybuilders over the last 10 years. I think he had probably the most potential, the most genetics of any bodybuilder around. Everybody said if Cedric could really come in top shape, he would win Mr. Olympia. He did win the Arnold Classic in 2017, and he's won quite a few other shows as well. He hasn't been doing that well the last couple of years because he's had some health problems. He had pneumonia a few years ago, and he had COVID really bad last year. And I saw a video of him recently where he said that he had like 10% of his heart working. He did a show, I think the one that Sean Clarita won last year after the Olympia, and he looked terrible. I guess he didn't even show up for the night show. So his condition has not been well, and I know he hasn't been feeling well health-wise, but this was a shock. I guess he died of a heart attack last week. I think he was on the treadmill at the gym. So just terrible, terrible news. Cedric was not only an amazing bodybuilder. I thought he had, if you listen to this podcast, I'm sure you've heard my opinion of Cedric whenever we talk about the modern day bodybuilders. I thought he had the best physique of all the modern day bodybuilders. And I've asked a lot of the old school bodybuilders as guests, and they have all agreed with me. And they said they all thought Cedric had the best physique because he had that aesthetic, classical look with today's muscle mass. He was as big as the guys are today. Probably about 270 pounds at 6'1", but he had that smaller waist and just that great classical look. He could hit the double bicep and the three-quarter back, and he looked like the bodybuilders from the old days. And he also respected the bodybuilders from the golden age. That's what he grew up reading about. He really liked Arnold. He had a lot of respect for Arnold, and he would always do the Arnold Classic every year, and he would always show up in his best condition at that contest. He would always miss his peak at the Olympia, or he would always miss the Olympia. But at the Arnold Classic, he was always in his best shape. So finally, he won that contest in 2017. I'm sorry. And Arnold was a big fan of Cedric. He loved his physique because Arnold loves those classic old school bodybuilders. And he recognized how great Cedric looked. And he loved his personality. Cedric was more than just a good bodybuilder. He had an amazing personality. He was very funny, very outgoing. He wasn't afraid to say anything. The year that he won the Arnold and Arnold came up to do his interview with him, Cedric took the mic over from Arnold and was asking Arnold questions. And he asked Arnold to do a three-quarter back pose, which Arnold did, and the crowd went absolutely crazy. So, yeah, it's such a big loss to the bodybuilding world, not only for the physique that Cedric had, like I said, but for his personality. He was just a different type of bodybuilder. I've never seen a pro bodybuilder like Cedric. The year after he won the Arnold Classic in 2018, they had the seminar that they do on Sundays after the contest, and they had Cedric up on stage as well. And he came up and he did a speech about how important the fans were of bodybuilding and the reason why he started bodybuilding, and how when he was a kid, the guy that his mother was dating was beating her and he couldn't do anything about it. So he'd go in the bedroom and lift weights. I mean, he was just so open and honest and revealing, and just his personality was just absolutely amazing. He really was an amazing person. I've admired him so much. I never got a chance to meet him, unfortunately, but he will be a big, big loss in the bodybuilding world. I think Cedric could have been someone who could have led the way to bringing back that classic physique. And even if he wasn't competing anymore, just as a spokesman, as an ambassador, and now we've lost him. So it's a real, real big loss in the bodybuilding world today. So unfortunately, rest in peace, Cedric McMillan, and best to his family and his friends. What a major loss. All right, what else is going on, guys? I got some emails. Well, I got actually one email from Australia. Peter Schuler sent me an email about last week's show that we did with Tom Terwilliger, Phil Williams, and Tony Pearson. It says, "Hey, John, your recent podcast with Phil Williams, Tony Pearson, and Tom Terwilliger was absolutely exceptional beyond compare. I gathered so much wisdom and encouragement through yourself and your three guests, especially when you wisely asked them all to reflect upon how their training intensity and attitude has changed since turning 60. I'm turning 44 this year, so I can relate closely to the various discussions you all had on young kids messing about in the gym, distracted on their phones and social media accounts. When I first started training in 1996, all my gym had was a dusty cassette player in the corner. Some of the discussions you four gentlemen had are some of the main reasons why I've invested in my own gym equipment since 2008, solely to be driven and focused alone in my garage without distractions and messing about. I found it so hilarious when Tom Terwilliger said, if I see another tattooed kid on social media showing off a bit of abs, I swear to God, I'm going to kill someone. Tom's always entertaining to listen to, such a formidable and authentic character. But John, if it weren't for your dedicated efforts each week since 2017, the glory of the golden years may never have been recollected through the many marvelous guests and anecdotes you share each week, especially with your supplementary magazine articles you read at the conclusion of each episode. Finally, I checked out your YouTube channel of the 1985 interview with Arnold promoting Commando. Did you think Arnold looked a bit peeved and offended with their sarcasm and inane jocularity? Much appreciation, John, from Australia. Regards, Peter Schuler." All right. Thank you, Peter. I really appreciate that email. I love that interview, too, last week with Phil and Tony and Tom. And I think you're going to love part two today. I also thank you for appreciating the articles. I'm glad you like that. I love reading the articles, and I think it's great to share these great old articles. I've got a ton of magazines, so why not share them instead of just having them sit here and having only me read them? I thought I would share them with you guys. So if anybody out there has any types of articles you want to listen to or you want to hear, whether they're training articles or certain years or certain contests, please let me know. And if I have them, I will definitely read them. And about your question about Arnold, I put up this video on my YouTube channel with Arnold being interviewed by movie critic Gene Siskel, who was part of Siskel and Ebert. If you remember them, they were the famous movie critic duo that was very famous in the 1970s, 1980s. They were very influential in the movie business because their reviews, whether they gave a movie a thumb up or thumbs down, would be very influential as far as the success of that movie. So Gene Siskel lived in Chicago, as did Roger Ebert, and that's where I grew up. And Gene interviewed Arnold on Channel 2, WBBM Channel 2 in Chicago, where he worked. And it was when Arnold was promoting the movie Commando. Gene used to be a reporter before he became a movie critic. So he asked some really hard questions of Arnold, and it was a really, really good interview if you guys want to check it out. And I don't think he looked a bit peeved at all. I think Gene was asking him some tough questions, and Arnold handled it with great charm and great charisma. So check that interview out if you get a chance. It's on my YouTube channel. I also put up a video of last week's interview with Phil Williams, Tony Pearson, and Tom Terwilliger, part one. Check that out, too, because I got some great clips in there of Tony's mixed pairs competitions and a lot of great pictures. So check that out when you get a chance. Finally, I want to mention I'm really busy with the online training at Pro Physique. So if anybody out there is interested in getting a workout and a diet plan from me personally, I've got the link listed below where you could sign up at Pro Physique. It'll go directly to my page. So if you guys are interested in that out there, check that out. I would love to help anybody out. All right. I think that's all we got, guys. So here is part two of our interview with Phil Williams, Tony Pearson, and Tom Terwilliger, where we talk about a variety of different subjects. You guys are going to love this one. Here we go. I did an interview last year with Tim Kimber and Ed Connors, and we were talking about Gold's Gym, and they were promoting a lot. You know, Gold's was promoting a lot of shows. And Tim said at one point, the TV networks wouldn't cover it unless they had a mixed pairs. They had to have a mixed pair. That's how popular it was.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So that was in 79. Then Wayne DeMille got me to work with Shelley Grew in 82.
Okay.
So still kind of rusty. I mean, what is pose and mixed pairs? But luckily, Shelley was a gymnast.
Okay.
But she knew about lines, transitioning, you know, body positioning.
Yeah.
So that's where I kind of learned that from her as well. I'm a quick learner.
Yeah.
And then I kind of developed my own posing, my own style and movement. And we just kind of blended in it together. And, of course, the contrast of color meant a lot. And also with Lisa, that was a big thing, too, the real contrast of color.
Yeah.
So when you look at it, it's art. People don't understand this. It's just work of art. And it's a lot of rehearsal time. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
If you make one mistake in your routine, everybody in the house saw it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to be on point, on poise. I mean, Bettina Plaginger, Carla, and we worked so hard not to miss a beat.
Mm.
You know, your hands, your head, your feet, everything moving the same. Don't get too far apart. Stay together as one. You one movement.
And the music, too. The music got to be right.
Music is very important. Yes. Very motivating music. I chose Prince music twice, even though I was a Michael Jackson about it.
Yeah.
But I kind of like the Prince movie because it's more sultry. And it's more, you know what I mean? It kind of blends better. As individual, I wanted Michael because it's such an upbeat and tempo, strong power.
Yeah.
With the girls is more like smooth, but you're hitting power shots at the same time.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask, but all the categories today, how come they don't bring that back?
I just want to say the words out of my mouth.
I was going to say that, Phil. Yeah.
They have to bring that back. I mean, it's
like if they did bring it back, you've got all these different women now. You've got bikini, which is very thin, and then you go all the way up to the women body, which was very muscular. And the same thing with the guys. I mean, well, the men's physique guys are pretty muscular. I don't think anybody's really thin. But, you know, then you got the men bodybuilders who are massive. I wonder which physiques, men and women, would work well together. I think it would have to be more aesthetic, right? More
aesthetic clients. I would say the bikini fitness girls.
Like the bikini. The bikini competitors.
And, and the class of physique guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a throwback to the old days.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think today's, you know, Mr. Olympia competitor.
No.
The full scale pro bodybuilder.
Oh, they're too big.
There's no aesthetic to aligned with the women just wouldn't look that balanced enough. No, right.
For the average person to get involved or appreciate it as to be bikini girls with the class of physique guys doing what we did back in the day, because we were on NBC every year. I was on NBC a year because we were going to replay it.
Yeah.
And that's how I got so much publicity for it. I mean, national television.
Yeah.
Because someone, say in Ohio or Milwaukee, wherever they're going to be living, turn on the television, they see, oh, mixed pairs. Wow. That's pretty to watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the bodies, the conditioning is very important.
Yeah.
And the music is important. And the presentation overall.
Presentation, the entertainment factor. Yeah.
Yeah. That's total entertainment. That's what.
Yeah.
And bring back what's lost, the art of beautiful posing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Posing.
Thank you.
Which is no longer around.
No.
Do you remember that year? That was the same year in Toronto, Tony, that you and I were up there competing in the mixed pairs. It was Russ Testo. Do you remember Russ Testo?
Yeah, of course I know Russ Testo. Yeah.
Do you remember that routine? It just blew my mind.
Right.
It was brilliant. It was Russ was John. You know Russ. I think everybody knows Russ.
Yeah.
Never really won any big bodybuilding competitions. Had a great physique. But was like the guest poser because he was brilliant. He was more of a dancer than he was anything else. And the routine, I'll never forget, there was a part in the routine. I can't remember which partner was. She was a little gal, but he had her over his head and then just looked like he just dropped her. She spun and wham, he catches her by the arm just before she hits the ground.
Wow.
I mean, everyone's heart stopped. We thought he just dropped her, man.
You know, it's funny. I saw him guest pose in Sweden twice when I was living
there. No kidding.
I kid you not. Yeah,
he guest poses at the Olympia, the Arnold. I mean, you don't have guest poses at the Olympia. He was the guest poser.
Right? I know. He always wore the hat. He had the hat.
And the hat.
That's right.
It was kind of a Michael Jackson thing mixed in with that a little bit.
He did. Yeah. Yep.
They should bring that mixed pairs back. There's so much potential for really an incredible artistic and creativity. Sure. You know what I mean?
I mean, look at the social media we have now, the platform.
Yeah.
IG, Facebook and all these places. It's so easy to get these guys together, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't it a lot of work, a lot of commitment and work? Yes.
Yeah.
But how beautiful that would be.
Yeah. And like you said,
and so it's fun because
the artistic part.
Yeah. And it's fun. And Tony can attest to this. It's one of those things where, you know, it's one thing. Bodybuilding is such a, you know, individualized. I kind of isolate. You have your training partners, you have your coaches and your friends and stuff like that. But it's you. And that's it, you know, but to collaborate at that level. And I remember the amount of work that I did with Gladys Portuguese, Brian Moss, helping us. We did a routine every day, putting it together, choosing the music, all of it. I did that again several years later with my wife as a guest poser. We did some competitions and that collaboration level, it creates something. It creates a camaraderie. It creates a connection. You know, you just and I think. The audience loves it for that reason, because both the men and women can appreciate it simultaneously.
Yeah.
I think the challenge today with bringing it into the competition is the competitions today are so long.
Yeah. There's so many,
so daunting, right. So many categories.
Yeah.
Right. But I think if they promote it correctly, this could take over.
Yeah. I think so too. I think it almost warrants its own competition in many respects.
Yeah. It should be separate. It should be separate.
Yeah.
It should be separate. Totally.
Yeah. Phil, do you ever wish you would have done one?
The reason the bodybuilding, the mixed pairs kind of died because it was hard getting partners together.
I know. Yeah. That was the issue. But that was when, remember, there was a select few. Think about it. You could almost count on two hands how many good or even decent female bodybuilders there were back then.
Right.
Yeah. Today, so it was hard, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Today, you've got female fitness competitors, figure competitors everywhere.
Well, you know?
So putting them together wouldn't be that difficult these days.
No. Well, you got hundreds in every category, I would imagine.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot to choose from. Yeah.
Sure.
Why do you think it died off, Tony?
That was part of the reason, because it's hard getting people to work together. There's so much work involved. And like you said, there's a lot of ego involved. You know, when I got with this girl, leave your ego at the door. We have work to do.
Yeah.
Just focus on what we need to do. And I was fortunate, you know, Carl and Shelley and Glad, all these people, wonderful people.
Wonderful.
Easy to work with.
Yeah.
You know, very helpful, and pick it up like that, you know.
And all good posers too. Yeah.
Yes. They were great poser in their own right. So
yeah.
It's easier. It made it a lot easier.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, we just lost sponsorship. There's another reason too.
Oh, that's weird. Cause it was so high. It was so big.
The last one went to Nice, France.
Yeah.
It was in Toronto all those years. It was in, Alaska, somewhere in Alaska, one of those years in 83. It was mostly in Toronto and Vegas.
Yeah.
Nick Harris in Vegas. Yes. And it just died. I think it was hard getting people. In fact, I spoke to Rachel about guest posing with me. She's very, that was in 82, 83.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to me, it's hard for me to remember my own routine. That's what she said. Sorry.
Hey, John, I got to pick up on that question. I think it kind of went by most of us. But Phil, did you ever consider that? And if you did, who would you have picked as a partner? And you can't say Tony. You can't say Tony.
Well, if I can't say Tony, then I can't say it then. No. I it never crossed my mind, really. I used to watch it.
Yeah.
But I never really thought about it. And if there were someone I would choose, no idea, really. Like I said, but the thought never crossed my mind.
Right. I have the perfect mixed pairs partner for you. She's gone. Rest in peace. But I think Nicole Bass would have been fantastic. Oh. And that would have been my revenge for the 85 national championship. Right there, man.
Hey, she's taller than you, Phil.
I know her. She was taller than me. She was bigger than me.
She would have picked you up.
I had to wear the bikini.
Picked me up over her head, man. Don't you think that would be perfect, guys?
I need to ask, what happened to Nicole?
She went down a bad path. She was a professional wrestler, but she also did a lot of, funky stuff online. I think some, drugs and, she took a turn for the worse and I'm not sure exactly how she passed, but it wasn't under good circumstances.
Okay. Now, was she married to Brian Moss once?
No, she was married to Brian. I don't think Brian ever got married. Brian was Gladys Portuguese boyfriend.
Yes.
And he headed up a company called Better Bodies, which was a gym, a model management company. We did. Actually, I worked with Brian a lot, Gladys a lot, Carla Dunlap. There was so many others that were involved in what we called Muscle Opera in Manhattan. We put together this in organization, and we just did shows. I mean, little gladiator outfits, men and women. It was actually a spectacle. And we did all the top nightclubs in Manhattan and had a blast over in the mid 80s.
Yeah.
And so I got to know a lot of the competitors, male and female, as a result of that, and hone the craft of performing in front of audiences. When you're doing it at nightclubs, doing it at the Olympia is easy. You know, I mean, it's just no one's throwing a bottle at you.
Yeah. Well, I thought Nicole married a gym owner in New York.
What's that?
I thought she married a gym owner in New York. It wasn't Brian Moss.
It was Brian Moss. They never married. In fact, she was when Gladys was and Brian were still together. I don't know if they were having challenges or not, but I was training at their Bed Bodies gym. We had just done the mixed pairs. Gladys was starting to really her star was starting to rise and shine, and she did a photo shoot for Muscle and Fitness magazine alongside Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Right.
And they fell in love.
They eventually married.
That's who she wound up marrying. Yeah.
I think they're still together. They divorced and he remarried, then went back to her.
Yeah. That's correct. That's from what I know as well. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I remember reading that article in Flex. I don't know who wrote it, but it was a scandalous article.
Right.
Yeah. Well, no, but I know who you're thinking of, Phil. Nicole Bass was married to another gym owner in New York.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't remember the guy's name.
Brian Fuchs, was it?
Bob Fuchs.
Bob Fuchs.
Okay. Bob Fuchs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bob and Nicole owned Natural Physique.
Yeah.
Okay.
In Lower Manhattan.
Yeah.
And I trained over there. So that's when I first met Nicole, and she was a character even then, man.
I remember.
She was fun to be. Bob and Nicole were a riot.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys a question. You guys miss the magazines?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Tom?
But I don't know what you mean. Miss the magazine?
You miss the magazines. Like Muscle and Fitness, Flex, Muscle Training Illustrated,
Iron Man. Or to the newsstand picking up a magazine.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say I miss them, because I don't follow bodybuilding that much anymore. But I will say this. And I don't know what happened to it, but I had a collection. I think we probably all did.
Sure.
It was like the Twin Towers.
Absolutely.
Some terrorists were going to come along and destroy it at some point.
Absolutely. It was,
from like the earliest Iron Man. Remember the little thing? That's it. The Iron Man magazine. Those little ones, remember?
Yeah.
You there still you have them, man.
Yeah.
Gladys Portuguese.
On the cover. Right
there. There you go.
But no, I don't miss them anymore today. Yeah. I miss being in them.
It's the first one that John Bailey did, remember?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
In fact, that shot was taken in
January 87.
Over by Better Bodies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Remember that. Yep.
Now, is that where he took the front lat spread by the sewer where the steam was?
That's right.
Well, this was after the 86 Olympia. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think.
You're probably
and that may be the one I'm confusing it with. Lee was in jeans on top of the manhole cover, steam coming out.
That's 84.
That was a better body.
Do you guys still have your magazines or no?
I've got a stack full.
Yeah.
I collect. I mean, every once in a while, someone will send me one, or I'll be able to, you know, somehow get a hold of one. For sure. Yeah.
I still have a few.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to get rid of a bunch of them. The ones that were down on the bottom for years got moldy, you know, so I had to get rid of those, but I kept a lot of them. Yeah.
Well, I've moved so much. I've lived in so many countries. I've lived in five countries and I can't count the cities. So, I mean, imagine trying to, you know.
Now, Utah?
That could be. I don't remember ever looking that good, but it could be. What is that in? What's that?
That's the Iron Man.
Oh, is that Iron Man?
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing that. Was that? Does that say underneath it, the man who should have won the 85 national?
Oh, boy.
I love Rousing Phil, man. Absolutely. It was like, it was such a great, in fact, it was my all-time favorite competition.
Yeah.
My all-time favorite, just because I knew it was head-to-head and the competition was great. And it was it was one of the few shows, the 85 National Championships, that I had taken third the year before and then heard that, you know, Phil was going to be in it in 85. 84, then 85, Phil was going to be in it. And a very dear friend of mine was out in California, out in Venice, came back. I met me on the beach, a gal friend of mine, and laid that next to me. And I said, so how was California? She says, that was great. She goes, I ran in, I saw Phil Williams out there. I'm like, really? Pretending not to care. I'm like, how'd he look? She just looked me up and down and says, you got a lot of work to do.
Well, one thing I like about that show, Tom, we didn't have to do prejudging, did we?
No. I mean, it was just like, we hit a couple of poses.
It was over.
It.
And then we got sent to the back.
First call out, go to the back. That was it.
Yeah,
we also lost Matt Mendenhall last year.
Wow. Now, John, what did he die of? I haven't heard.
Well,
does anyone know?
No, they never released an autopsy. No. I know he had really bad back surgery, really intensive back surgery. And I know he lived alone. So, you know, I don't know. Somebody who knew of the situation, I don't want to mention who, but they told me that he should not have been sent home. It was like too big of a surgery. He should have stayed in the hospital. The hospital really made a mistake sending him home.
Wow.
Because he lived by himself. He had nobody to take care of him.
Yeah, that's an impossible situation.
Yeah, and he was on a lot of pain pills. So I don't know. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Because he was our age. He's like
he was very young guy.
He's my age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was 60. Yeah.
Yeah. I was pretty close friends with Matt. We didn't get to see each other a lot. He was here in Colorado. Once in a while, we would get together and we talked on the phone. I was trying to be there to support him, but he was kind of stubborn then. And, you know, I didn't want to accept a lot of help. I was offered. But it just kind of came out of the blue. And I think it was post-surgery.
Yeah.
So we don't know exactly what caused it, but
yeah.
What a shame. What a shame, man. What a loss. He was a great guy, too. I love Matt.
Yeah, in addition to the magazines, I've got a bunch of old videotapes, and I've been slowly getting them, like take three or four at a time, getting them converted to DVD and MP4 so I can put them on YouTube and stuff. And I just saw the 91 Nationals prejudging, and he was in that. He got fifth place. And they had the prejudging, which I must have saw this when I bought it, but I haven't seen it in years. It was like watching it for the first time. And they had him standing there. That guy had such an incredible physique. His arms were so big. That guy had so much potential.
Beautiful shape.
Shaped legs.
Yeah.
I'll say this.
Small waistline.
Yeah. If he would have got in incredible condition, he could have been Mr. Olympia.
No doubt.
Well, his structure was so incredible. He was so wide. Yeah. And he had no missing body parts. He had the leg.
No, I
forgot how big his arms were. When he hit an arm pose, holy shit, it looked like there were 22-inch arms. It was
his amazing. His triceps. Huge, man.
Yeah.
He didn't have a lot of peak in his bicep. They were more like the football style, you know? Those triceps, man.
Yeah.
Killer. I think he could have easily been Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
True.
It was interesting. It's interesting because he was one of these guys. He was smart. I mean, really smart guy. If you really had a conversation with him, the guy was smart. He knew his anatomy, his physiology. He knew all this stuff. But something eluded him in the mindset aspect of it all.
Yeah.
And he was never able. His body would disappear like literally days or weeks before a competition. Right. You see him and be like, oh, my God, no one's going to touch this guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden he would show up and it was just like, what happened? He got soft or flat or something. And I think we all know that the mindset can manifest that. There's no question about it. It wasn't that he screwed up his diet or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, right. A lot of pressure going into him after the 82 Nationals.
Yeah, there was so much pressure.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe that was too much pressure.
Yeah.
That could have a negative effect.
But that's like Tom said, that's the mindset. You got to have that. Rachel wrote something on Facebook after he passed away, and she said he was very accident prone. He would always get into accidents all the time, always hurting himself. Like when she was dating him, they were riding bikes, and she looked back and he was gone and he fell off his bike and it broke his arm. And I mean,
wow.
It's sad that he died alone, you know, that he was by himself after that surgery. That's just sad. Wow. A guy that young, especially, you know.
Wow. I mean, he had friends. He had people who loved him. He had a sister, but, he lived alone.
Hey, Tom, what kind of surgery? Do you know what type of surgery?
Back.
It was spinal surgery. And it was
like a back fusion, yeah.
Yeah, it was a fusion. I'd be guessing, but I think he had like 5 or 6 discs fused.
Yeah.
Probably from underneath where the bolts were put in. Very complicated because he'd been suffering with back issues for a long time, man. Okay. And we all know anyone who's ever had a back issue, even a bad cramp or something that just doesn't want to give up.
Yeah.
To live with that chronic pain all the time. It just wears you down, man.
Well, that's you. I think what caused the surgery was he fell down the stairs. I think he slipped and fell down the stairs, and that's what messed up his back. So,
wow. Yeah.
Man. Mm. Yeah, he was a good guy. It was funny because here's a anecdotal quick story how small a world it is, and it had to do with Matt. When I was training back in New York, I had my gym where you and I trained, Phil.
Right.
My training partner, his guy name was John, big Irish guy, and he was a supplement distributor, and he was a great guy, and he was one of my best training partners. But anyway, he had another best friend named Matt Mendenhall in Colorado. So him and Matt were best friends, but I didn't know that. We never really talked about that. And John, the guy's name was John, and I were working on putting a business thing together that he had presented me with. And I think it had something to do with a supplement company that his friend in Colorado was working on and putting together. And he and they were collaborating together, wanted me to come in on it, right? And so here's the small world. Matt was training at a place called Flex Gym. My wife, now Dawn, was working at Flex Gym. I didn't know Dawn from a hole in the ball at the time, was working at Flex Gym and was talking to Matt about this supplement company that he was putting together because she was a graphic artist. And she said, I can do your logos for you. And then it all came full circle. It's like, wait a second. John and Matt are best friends. This deal is coming our way. We may go into business together. Matt is friends with Dawn, who I didn't know, later on married. So it's just like, what a small world.
Yeah, that's
crazy. It was, man. It's just, it's crazy.
Well, before I let you guys go, I want to ask you about your very first contest, the very first show you did, and what, tell me the story, the memories of that.
Very first?
Yeah, the very first one.
My very first, I'll go first, was the Mr. Missouri Valley. I was 17 years old, still in high school.
What year was that, Phil?
1977.
Okay.
So I decided to go in it at the last minute. It was at the YMCA where I trained.
Okay.
And I went to Kmart and bought a pair of underwear. And, you know, I used disposing trunks.
Yeah.
And didn't shave, didn't know anything about that. And got some baby oil.
Did you have any tan on, any color?
No, just natural color.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what? I don't know if they even tanned back then. I'm sure some did, but that level, no.
Yeah.
And I took 13th out of 26 guys.
How was the experience?
A little pack.
Oh, it was fun. I mean, I liked it and wanted to do it again. Of course, I found out about the Teenage Mr. America at that point, knew who the winners were and the top placers. So then my mind at that point, I started training for the Teenage Mr. America.
Okay. Was it nerve-wracking, Phil, when you did it?
Not really. It was pretty easy because I didn't know how to prepare for it. I did diet for the last 6 weeks on tuna and strawberries. 4 or 5 cans of tuna a day with 4 or 5 strawberries with each meal.
How was the posing getting up?
I practiced in the mirror, just hitting a double bicep, front lat spread, side chest.
Yeah.
All the mandatory poses. There was no routine. I just got up there and started doing mandatory poses.
Were you nervous?
Hit them twice.
Were you nervous
at
all?
Yes and no.
Okay.
But not real nervous. But yeah, you know, most of the guys, I looked around. I said, well, I might do pretty good here.
Yeah.
13 out of 26. Not terrible, but, you know.
Right in the middle.
Yeah. And I was the youngest guy in the show because in Missouri, they didn't have a teenage division.
Oh,
yeah.
So I competed against guys who trained much longer than I have. And, you know, so I didn't do too bad. It was
pretty good. Any good feedback after it was over?
Oh, yeah. David Washington, the guy that trained me and helped me once I joined the YMCA, I went to school with his son. He got me ready for the Mr. Missouri, which was like 4 months after that show.
Okay.
And I ended up taking second in the short class and that's the Mr. Missouri.
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, I did well. It accelerated. I was able to make some good gains and learned how to shave and learned how to pose a little better. And of course, improved in the Mr. Missouri, which was a bigger show than the Mr. Missouri Valley.
Yeah.
How are you, Tony?
George Turner was training me one day and he says, I got a weightlifting competition we're going to do because, you know, powerlifting was the biggest thing in the Midwest. Squat, deadlift. And he says, well, I'm going to put on a bodybuilding contest at the end of the show. So I said, okay. And he goes, I want to put you in it after about 9 months of training under him. He says, do a double bicep pose for me. That's when I hit my pose. And he started yelling. He goes, you know, my grandson can outpose you. This is, you can't pose at all.
He's the guy.
Yes, this is George Turner.
Oh, we're right
there at George Turner. And he said, you know, he's really loud. And so the whole gym can hear it. And it looked like an idiot. So going on stage was terrifying because I had no, and it was using spotlights on his stage at the time. It wasn't full light. So
yeah.
It was a spotlight. You go out. And I guess, I don't know how I did. I just hit the pose because you can't see the audience. They see you.
Yeah.
And I was terrified. Yes. I could not pose at all. I just went, you know, like this. And that was it. This kid, he goes, I got to teach this fucking kid how to pose, too. You know how George gets. With his loud voice. So I'm embarrassed. I'm mortified. And then.
How old were you in that show, Tony?
I was 19. That was very 19. Soon before I moved to California.
Oh, okay.
I did the Mr. St. Louis and the Mr. Missouri, two shows before I went to L.A.
Okay.
I think I came in third in the Mr. St. Louis and sixth in the Mr. Missouri.
Okay.
So, but that was it. And then I made my way to L.A. So.
Did George give you any good feedback after? Did he let you know you had any potential?
He did. He said, you know, there's a lot of guys that they've been training a lot longer than you, and we're going to get back to the fucking training. You're going to go kick their asses next year, you know. He gave his wonderful speech.
Yeah.
But in my mind at that point in time, I wrote about that I was automatically thinking about California already.
Yeah.
Then hearing about California, Venice, and Gold's Gym. I remember George said, well, if you're going to go out there, he hated the fact that I was going to leave. You're going to go out there. I was like his protege. And he goes, well, go down to Gold's Gym in Venice. I'll never forget that Venice because I have never heard of Venice, California before.
Mm-hmm.
That stuck in my head. Venice. Wow. Look up Ken Waller, he said. Tell him I sent you. Maybe he can help you. Mm. So that's how when I got to L.A., this is a true story. I walked into Gold's Gym, the original Gold's Gym, Pacific Avenue. All the champs were there except for Arnold.
Yeah.
Joe Weed was taking pictures of Frank Zane that day. And I got to see all these guys in real life, not from the magazine or TV. And I saw Ken Waller in the back corner doing squats. Mm-hmm. He was big as the house. I mean, he had his legs. He had this look on his face. I mean, he was huge. Waist was this big. And I said to myself, I am going nowhere near that man. I was so intimidated, so terrified. I didn't approach him at all.
What year was that?
That story.
What year was that?
That was in 1976 when I got to LA. So beginning of 76, I did those two shows. And I said, George, I'm moving to California. And boy, did he turn his desk upside down, slamming, hit the microphone or the intercom on. So he's screaming at me, you're never going to beat it.
15 years old. Whole gym listening.
Yeah.
Whole gym, yes. There's kids out there, arms, 15 years old, got arms bigger than yours. You're never going to make it, he said. So yelling and screaming and throwing things. And I'm standing there like, scared to death. I was terrified of George.
Yeah.
We all were. We both were anyway.
So, but he calmed down, and then he says, well, look up Ken Wall. I think he knew if I was going to ever make it, I had to go to California. He knew. I'm not going to make it in St. Louis. No photographer or writer is going to come to St. Louis. Yeah.
Right, right.
I got to L.A., you know, the first contest I won was Mr. Venice Beach. Mm. So, yeah, 1976, Muscle Beach.
Wow.
Yeah, that was my first win. I have pictures. I still have the pictures.
Yeah.
So, but the posing thing came later. I was not a good poser. I didn't have any rhythm.
How did you feel in that first show? Did you like it?
The one in California or back in St. Louis?
In St. Louis, the very first one.
I was terrified.
Yeah.
I mean, with that spotlight, you got to step up. And I had watched guys pose on stage before me. And I was fascinated by it because I said, this is art.
Yeah.
I'm an artist in a way. And I go, they're transitioning from pose to pose and they've got the music playing and the condition is amazing. So I saw the art form. I never wanted to be a big bodybuilder. I want to be the artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But big enough to win.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know, Sean Ray calls me the illusionist. Because you look at me backstage wearing clothes and go, dude, you look so small. But people used to run backstage after I posed and go, was that you out there? So that was how confusing I was, you know. So I always saw myself as an artist. And that first posing routine was really bad because George didn't do a good job helping me at all.
Yeah.
Yelling at me the whole time. So I just hit a double bicep pose, the mandatory poses. Routine? What routine? What's that? And that was it. Maybe that's why I played so low. But then in LA, it was the same thing. I look at the pictures now, and the double bicep. Everything was wrong. I could see in the picture now.
Yeah, yeah.
You just hit your shot. My condition was good. I was in good shape. I was cut. But the posing was off.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to start to learn how to pose. You know, the guy who helped me a lot was Jimmy Caruso. You know who
that is? The photographer.
Yes, I was in Canada, and he saw me and says, let's go pose. For 3 hours, he worked with me. How to position my feet, my knees, transition, how you move your hands.
It's huge.
Pose, project yourself. So those 3 hours changed my whole mindset.
Mm.
The posing means so much.
Wow.
Especially when you're not a big guy.
Yeah.
You got to create this illusion.
Yeah.
So your condition's got to be top form. You got to be on point. Your presentation's got to be on point. And you have to have this smile on your face the whole time. You got to be presentable.
Yeah.
Connected with the audience. So I learned that as I went along. And I would spend hours and hours. Another guy who helped me was Kent Keene. You know who Kent Keene
is? Yeah. Manager of Gold.
Drive all the way from LA to the Valley every weekend, teach me how to pose. Even though I was posing on stage, but I was still learning. Then after a while, it became natural. I would create the first two poses and I'd just go.
Just wing it. Yeah.
Wing it.
Yeah.
Because I knew, just move.
Yeah.
So people don't understand posing is a dance. You're up on your toes and your hands are moving and the people are following your hands.
Yeah.
So they don't see your feet moving.
Yeah.
That's how you transition.
Yeah.
And some poses are hard, fast. Some poses are slow. You mix the two. So they never know what you're going to do next.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the idea. Now, Kai Green is to me like the only poser in the last 10 years that really pose.
Yeah.
Because you're on the edge of your seat, what is he going to do next?
Yeah.
Bodybuilding, you're a performer. You're given a show without speaking lines.
Yeah.
You're present, your face, communicating with the audience. And the more they get involved, the more you get involved. So here we go.
So, I like what you said about the feet, how you don't really
you don't notice the feet moving when your hands are moving.
Right.
They're gonna fall on your hands.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
So and you know, on stage there's a lot to do with the lighting too. There's a lot of things gotta be in play.
Yeah.
Lighting's gotta be good.
Yeah.
The posing's gotta be perfect, especially if you're a small guy, you gotta project everything. When you stand in the lineup, you gotta be poised and on flexing the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, when the big guys sit up there with the hands on their waist because they're so damn big.
Yeah.
The little guy's got to be
tired.
Flex from head to toe the whole time.
Yeah. How about you, Tom?
You know, it was around the same time, though. I think my first competition was 1977.
Okay.
I think I was around, I don't know, I might have been 16, 17. I seem to remember it was like close to 17. And I had been training at some little rinky dink, you know, high school gym and discovered Future Man, where I told you, which was like, this place was hardcore, you know.
Yeah.
Walked in, and it wasn't long before I got the bug. I mean, I already had the bug in many respects. I wanted to build a physique, but it really wasn't thinking about competition at all. But then it was one of those gyms where everybody competed. It was like, you had some great guys and they were all competing and trophies were everywhere. It's just like, I wanted to be part of that. I wanted to be part of that tribe, you know?
Yeah.
So even as a teenager, you know, the fear around it was always there, and I was still skinny in my first competition, but it was the West Orange, New Jersey YMCA basketball court, you know? And like Tony's and Phil's experience, was just a little dais, they called it, right? The little platform, it could have been more than 4 feet by 4 feet, and a single light bulb lamp. There's just this little spotlight thing, right? It was crazy. And so I got talked into it. Tony Bandolfo said, yeah, you should go in your first competition. Why not get up there, get your feet wet, you know? And he taught me a little bit. I looked at the magazines. I started practicing based on the magazine. What was I seeing? Yeah. I had no idea about transitions yet. But who do I want to emulate? What kind of poses? So that's what I started doing then early on. And so that came across, I think. But I get there and I'm looking at these guys. And I'll tell you, at the time, you know, the guy that was winning every, and this was the teenage show, but the guy that was winning every teenage show, I just transitioned to the open, was Ron Tufel. Does anybody remember Ron Tufel?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Ron Tufel was in.
Yeah.
Tony was great.
Ron Tufel. Yeah.
Right? That's right. You did some head-to-head with Ronnie. Yeah. And he was great. You know, great. He didn't have an aesthetic physique whatsoever, blocky waist. But for his day, man, that guy could pull some muscularity together, you know?
Oh, yeah, he was thick.
Yeah, so Ron Tufel was in this. Mike Torsha won the Teenage America, of course, later on. You know, didn't do a lot later on as an amateur because he wasn't a big, structurally great physique. But the guys like that, Dwayne Broadway was also a great bodybuilder. Tony Pandolfo, who later became my mentor, was in the open division. John Defendez.
Yeah.
Was also in the teenage, my height class in the teenage division. And it was like, I think it was six. And I remember, you know, you asked, everyone else was like, were you nervous? I was scared shitless, honestly. You know what I mean? I was like, it was so intimate. The people in the little chairs, you know, lined up watching. And it was just like, you're in these little trunks.
Yeah.
All their eyes on you.
it's kind of terrifying, you know, it really is. And I'm sure I was one of those guys that were like the deer in the headlights, just like going to my poses, looking straight ahead. I don't want to see anybody. So it was terrifying. But it was a great experience, a really great experience. And I took second, I think. John Defendez took third.
Okay.
He teases me about it like I tease you, Phil. You know, every time he writes me and says something, he's like, hey, he brings it up, you know, but it's hysterical.
Yeah.
So I was happy with that. To have placed in the top three was pretty fantastic, you know.
Yeah.
And I got a trophy. It was a tiny little trophy. But going home with a trophy all the way from West Orange, New Jersey, back to Long Island, I was just like, I was just giddy as hell.
Yeah.
Because my parents were there. They had to drive me. And they didn't really quite fully understand it.
Right.
You know, like they were still confused about what this is all about, but it was keeping their teenage son from trouble. He was focused. He was in the gym instead of getting in trouble with his friends.
Yeah.
So they were all for it in that respect. And what some really great things came from that. Number one, the next year I went back and won the teenage and the open division and the Metropolitan, some other big shows. But also I got introduced. That's where a guy named Bob Gruskin. Does anybody remember Bob Gruskin, the photographer?
Yeah, I used to know Bob real. We used to talk on the phone. I used to talk to him from Kansas City to where, New York.
He was New York, right? He lived in the Bronx.
We talked almost once a week.
No kidding.
For a period of time. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
I didn't know you knew him. So.
I didn't either. But Bob knew. Bob knew and had an influence on so many young champions.
Yes.
Oh yeah. So many.
Yeah.
Mendenhall. I mean, I can't even name the list. You know, right. It's just like wow.
Gary Scalise and John DeFeo.
Yep. Yeah. So he approached me at the contest, gave me a card, and said, "Hey, you got potential."
Yeah.
That was as encouraging as the little tiny trophy I got. Yeah. Hey, you got potential. You know, let me come see you. You know, where do you train? I said, Future Man. Oh, I know Future Man. You know, I know Tony. And so he came out one day and he did some photos. He wanted to do some photos. And then we developed a relationship and he guided me and coached me for a long time. And I didn't know John DeFendes at that time. I knew, you know, hey, it was a guy looked good. He placed just below me. But I didn't know John from a holy ground. And I remember Bob Gruskin showed up when I was training for the teenage Metropolitan the next year. And the Metropolitan was a big show. It was won by Chris Dickerson, Dennis Tenorino, wow. A lot of guys, Steve Mihalik won the Mets. They all went on to win the Mr. America shortly after that.
Yeah.
And so I was training for the teenage version of that, the teenage division. And Bob came in and we already had a relationship, a coaching relationship, but he came in with this kid. And he had like this skin tight leather jacket on. And I'm like, I'm training. I'm in Future Man. And I look at this guy. I'm like, God damn. Fucking guy looks good, man. I mean, he looked good. And he looked like a competitor. And he introduces me. This is John DeFendes. You guys have competed together. He's going to be in the Mets. Bob knew exactly what he was doing. He was like saying, you got competition here, kid.
Right, right.
Step it up. You know what I mean? He goes, I know you're training hard, but you also think you can party with your teenage friends. That ain't happened if you're going to win this thing, you know?
Good.
And so I was intimidated. I was intimidated by John because he was a thick kid at the time, you know?
He was intimidating as a teenager.
He was. He really was.
In 79, at the age of 21, I think he took third in the AAU Mr. USA.
Yeah.
Medium class, right?
Third as a teenager. Yep. And he won as a teenager. So I beat him at the Mets that year. But then he came back the next year. He was still a teenager, 19, won the teenage division, won the open division. And he just looked like a different guy.
Yeah.
But so a lot of good came from that first competition. Number one, getting the feet wet, developing a love for it, overcoming fear and anxiety, you know, meeting Bob Gruskin, you know, John DeFendes, competing with guys I'd seen in the magazines before, Tufel and stuff. So many good things come from that. And I would encourage anyone to just say, hey, you know what? Don't get up there looking like a fool. Put the preparation, as Tony said, put the preparation in. Make sure you're prepared. Learn a little bit about posing. Make sure you shave. Get yourself prepared. But it's a great learning, growing experience, especially for a young person. I think for every one of us, can we say that, man?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that none of you guys won. You know, like Phil, you were 13 out of 26. Yeah. But you came back and, you know, and then you all became champions.
Let me ask you, we all competed as teenagers, right?
Yeah, I did.
Right.
Yeah.
Everyone?
Okay, all of us.
Yeah.
What's going on with the teenage division today? Do you see it anymore? Do they still have the teenage nationals?
They changed the rules. They changed the rules and they said you have to be 18 or 19 to compete. You can't compete as younger than that. Funny if you see it.
You know what? I wasn't aware of that. That's interesting. You think about all four of us and so many great champions above and beyond us just like came up through the teenage ranks.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. I know. Wow. Interesting. My first show was 16. You guys were all like 16, right?
17, yep. 16, 17.
20 was 19.
I was 19.
Right. Yeah. Right. So. Yeah.
I think they're afraid of the drugs. It's some kind of thing with the drugs.
I want to encourage
drug use
among
younger guys.
Yeah.
We had nothing back in the day. We had nothing.
Right.
I didn't go near anything till years of teenagers. Right. No way.
Right. No way. What's that?
That's what I said. Just because you've never heard of it, you have to take them. You know.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you guys a funny story. since we're talking about that. I was 17 years old. I competed in the Mr. Missouri. In the gym I trained in Kansas City, or outside of Kansas City, in a little gym called Moffitt's Gym in Shawnee Mission, Kansas. One of the guys that competed was a pharmaceutical sales rep. Right. So he says, Phil, he goes, I'm going to talk to you. Come over here. When you finish your workout, he goes, let's go outside. So I finished the workout, went outside. He took me, opened the trunk of his car, and he goes, I want you to try these. He gave me a couple of bottles. And I said, well, what's this? And I looked at it. I said, Dianabol. I said, what does that do? So I'm 17 years old. He goes, I want you to take three of these a day until you run out. He goes, and then when you do, I'm going to look at you in a couple of months. I just want to see how you progress on this. I said, well, okay, well, what does it do? He goes, it will help you.
It will help you. That's it.
And that was pretty much it.
Wow. Yeah.
I went from 155, 154, 155. In 3 months, I got up to about 194.
Wow.
In 3 months time.
3 months.
Yeah. Well, in 3 months time, whatever it is, 30 pounds or whatever that is. Yeah. 154 to like 194, 195.
Wow.
In 12 weeks.
Yeah.
It took me 10 years to get up to that weight. Seriously, man.
Yeah.
Man. So that was your first experience with that. That's like that a whole nother.
Yeah. That was the first experience.
That's a whole nother show, John.
Right. Yeah. There, man.
Oh boy.
That'll be our next show. Yeah. So
that's something.
Yeah. All right, Tom. Well, should we cut it off at 2 hours? Make it a short show this time.
I got my thermos.
Has it been that long? Yeah,
coffee. I'm ready to go to 3 a.m., man. I don't know about anybody else. Let's do it.
All right, guys. I want to thank you again for joining me on the show. It's great talking to you guys. We had a great time last year, and I think maybe we'll do this every so often because it's fun talking to you guys.
It's a lot of fun. Guys.
At some point, you'll be like, hey, we lost someone great this year. Remember Tom?
hey, guys, I told you about the heart condition, right?
Yeah.
Endocarditis. Okay, John, do you know about the appendectomy?
I think I heard it on your other show.
About 3 months ago.
Okay,
that was another one. Ooh, close call.
What was the heart condition, Phil?
I had extensive dental work done. So the bacteria from the dental work traveled to the heart. It's called endocarditis.
Right.
So they had to open the heart up. It was a 7.5 hour procedure. I had a murmur. They had to close it. Three arteries they had to clean. Mm. And then they sewed me back up.
Wow.
Or, you know, they didn't stitch. They used glue or whatever they use now. You don't have the stitches any longer. So whatever they do.
Right.
Yeah. But that was that took 3 months to recover from.
Wow.
And when was the appendix?
The appendix was about 3 months ago.
Okay.
We worked out that morning, my wife and I, she's my workout partner. We went, did cardio, did some shopping, went home, cooked for a couple of days, went to lay down. We said, oh, let's watch a movie. So I felt a sharp pain in my side suddenly. And I went, oh, what the fuck is that? That's weird. That didn't feel right. 3 hours later, she had to call an ambulance.
Wow.
Appendix burst.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
5 days in the hospital.
Yeah.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It must have been miserable, man. How long ago was that?
Three months ago.
3 months ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
You look great, man.
I know, right?
Feel good.
Yeah.
Are you back training?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Been training. I've trained each body part 3 times. So I've been a month plus back into training, going into the fourth cycle. So strength's back. Good.
We're survivors, man. If nothing else.
Hey, we didn't have time to cry about things that happened to us when we were kids coming up. I mean, I hate to say this, and I'm going to say this. We didn't have pussy parenting.
No, man.
You know? We didn't have that back then.
We're pussy gym owners.
Or that too.
Yeah. No, George. George was a piece of work.
Oh, shit, man. If you couldn't hang your... You know what? He'd test you to see what you were. And that's why he drew that to you.
Yes.
So you see, if you had it in you to stay, if you had it in you, he'd work with you. He'd begin to like you. He'd tease you.
Yeah.
And he'd insult you all the time. But that was the way he showed love.
Yeah. Mm. Yes. Yeah, we had to be tough. We had tough trainers, we had tough coaches, we had tough parents. And even, you know, John, going back, and I know you're ready to cut this off, but I just wanted to say, I think, you know, we pointed out that none of us won our first contest.
Yeah.
I suspect that it would have been detrimental to our ambition to have won that first competition.
Yeah.
You know, sort of like
that's what creates the desire, right?
Absolutely, it created desire.
Yeah.
Whatever little pain, whatever little desire we had to achieve greatness in the sport, could have been diminished just enough to keep us from pursuing it all the way, man.
Yeah. Hey, Tony, what's going on with the documentary? Are you still working on the documentary on your book?
It's in post-production.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that takes a while.
Yeah.
So I don't know yet. So we're sit back, wait.
But is it kind of, it's done filming?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Great. Right.
So we went to Memphis, we went to St. Louis, and then
I remember you told me that, yeah.
The Vegas part. So yeah, and they're trying to, you know, tie it all together.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of plus finding original music for it. It's a lot of work. So
yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah. So we'll see.
It's hard to get a film out there. I mean, even without the streaming services and stuff, it's still not that easy.
Right. It takes me 26 hours to put out a 30-second Facebook video. I can't even imagine.
I can't imagine a 2-hour documentary.
Right. Do the math. It's like.
Hey, Tony, I lost contact with them because I was hacked on Instagram. If you could send me their information.
Okay.
To my phone number, text me their information so I can look them up and keep up with them.
Okay. I would.
Those are great people.
For sure. Exactly.
Thanks.
Yeah, so, you know, the title is Driven. I got to throw it out there.
Yeah, for sure.
The book is Driven. You can still read about it. So it's still there. You know, I had a tough, rough childhood, and that helped me a lot being with George because I was conditioned already. I was, you know what I mean? So you're right. He tested me every chance he got, he would test me. And I realized later, training 10 sets of 10, squats, 400 pounds, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday was torture.
Yeah,
he lost his mind, but he really wanted to see if I'm going to ever say no.
Yeah,
I can't.
Yeah,
and I know he would have said, "You can take the effing door."
Oh,
exactly what he would have said.
He'll show you the door real quick.
He never said no. I never said I can't. I never said nothing. I just whatever George told me to do, I did, and kept my mouth shut.
Yeah. Well, it took a lot of balls, Tony, what you did, man, going out to California by yourself at 19 years old. Well, you had a friend, but he left.
He ran back. This is the first time I had real fear. I mean, going out there was exciting. You're going to California, you know, going to go see all the muscle guys. And then when he left and I was stuck downtown L.A. in the jungle, that's when fear hit me.
So
bad, I went to the hospital.
First
came over and said, you're hyperventilating.
You're going
to have a heart attack. So physically, you're in great shape.
Yeah.
And she goes, do you have any issues going on in your life? I go, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
The first thing he said was, have you ever been in Gold's Gym?
Right.
Yes, I got issues.
I got a lot of issues. I'm starving, I'm broke, and I don't know where the hell I'm going.
Right. Yeah. Unbelievable. What's going on with you, Tom? Anything new?
You know, I'm always producing something online. We've got a brand new program that we're working with on I'm really helping and supporting, like I said, more mature adults, 40, 50, 60 years old. There's something, you know, it's interesting because there's been all sorts of science on this. It's called the satisfaction U curve. And this is across the board. They've studied millions and millions of people. Doesn't matter about, you know, socioeconomics, age, race, anything, that on average between about 45 and about 62 years old, people dip in their satisfaction in life and happiness. And it's not everyone, but it's a good majority. So we've sort of like identified what we believe is the cause of that, what we believe can remedy that, improve our energy levels, our focus. And it's not a particular supplement. It's a lifestyle. It's a process, you might say. And we're entering people through that, through what's called the Vitality Score, thevitalityscore.com. So if you take that quiz in there, and it's very enlightening, the quiz, but it leads to some really great tools. So that's what we're doing. I'm really embracing this over 40, over 50, over 60. And the reason I even just say over 40 is because not everyone still feels their vitality at 40. Some people are like feeling a lot worse than other people at 65. At 40, they're already giving up on themselves. They feel old more than anything else. It's a mindset. So we help people identify that and then create some structure around lifestyle that can really make the difference and embrace this, as I like to call it. You know, we're calling ourselves the second half renegades, but really embracing this idea, this concept that we are now tribe elders and we deserve that respect and we deserve the vitality and the energy to be able to help others along the way as well. So that's kind of what we're up to. And I'd love for anyone listening, if you happen to be over 40, feeling your energy drop, feeling like, hey, you know what? I could really use some support. Number one, you've got some great freaking trainers here. Reach out if you're in those areas at all. If not, go to thevitalityscore.com and we'd love to help you, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Phil, you just did a really good interview with Sean Ray on Digital Muscle.
Right.
Fantastic interview. Great interview.
Oh, you guys saw it.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good. I remember, John, you saying you saw it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun with that. I've known Sean since he was a teenager.
Yeah.
We guest posed together, of course. And I didn't get a hotel room. So he invited me back to his house.
Yeah.
Like I said, he was still 19 and I was 24. It was between the USA and the Nationals.
Okay.
Yeah. Wally Bolcoy used to put on a show in Disneyland every year.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, you remember that? Okay, yeah. So that was his. That was Wally Bolcoy's event.
Okay.
All right. It was. I was happy with it. It turned out we had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, you said a few things out there I didn't know about you, so that was interesting.
Oh, and the autism thing.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah. And the Egyptian thing is as well. Yeah,
right.
I talked about that with him, which I never bring up because it never comes up.
Yeah.
So that's
cool, man.
Being autistic. Well, you're not. You didn't say you were totally autistic, but like on the.
No, I mean you look at like an umbrella.
Yeah.
My autism is, let's say, on the far left or the far right. I don't know any particular side, but I'm under the umbrella.
Yeah.
And so there's things that I grew up with, not liking crowds, not liking people. I rock constantly. I rock in my sleep. I rock when I eat. Mm-hmm. There's no time that I'm not rocking unless I'm focused on something.
Yeah.
Like training, but I rock between sets. But that's something I've done from day one.
Yeah.
Far back as my mom used to try to take me to therapist or, you know, she thought maybe he's retarded. She told my dad once.
They don't know. They're doing the best they can.
Yeah. And the guy said, oh, he'll grow out of it. Don't worry about it. But it's never happened. I've never grown out of it. I still don't like crowds. I still don't like people. I read the 10. I mean, you know, in general, I don't like people in general.
At least you went through, not this crowd.
I went through a list of 10 items that autistic things, right? And I was four of them, 100%.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's something that I've learned to deal with.
Wow.
And, you know.
Well, I know when I do interviews with you, you remember details. You remember dates,
years. Yeah.
50 years ago, you remember the exact date.
Yeah, there's some pluses for it. There's some pluses with it, and there's some minuses, of course.
Yeah.
So I've learned to deal with it over the years and accepted that. That's what I have. And so I'm aware of everything I say, do. I have to think before I speak most of the time, especially in a crisis situation. You know what I'm saying? On an emergency or some, you know, tragic event. Because the first thing will come out is two syllable words and four letter words. If I don't do that. Uh-oh. So there's some things we laughed about and talked about.
Yeah.
It's funny, man. It's humor to me. I laugh at it.
Yeah. Well, check that out on YouTube, anybody, if you haven't seen it. All right, guys. Well, it was a pleasure talking to all of you. Phil, Tony, Tom, and hopefully, like I said, we'll get a chance to do this again soon.
Great talking to you guys. Good to see you guys.
Good seeing all you guys.
All right. All right.
Honored. Care, guys.
All right.
All right. You guys have a great evening.
You too. Take care, guys.
Okay, guys. Take care, guys.
All right.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to my guests, Phil Williams, Tony Pearson, and Tom Terwilliger for coming back on the show.
I really enjoyed talking to all three of these guys, and we will have them back again one day. All right. If you guys have any questions or any suggestions on the show, please email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And I want to thank our Patreon donors who generously donate to the show every month. And if you guys are interested in being a Patreon donor yourself and helping out the show, you can do that by going to our official website, which is bodybuildinglegendshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link to be a Patreon donor. And I really do appreciate all you guys that contribute each month. We cannot do the show without you. And please check out my YouTube channel under my name, John Hansen. I've got a lot of great videos up there. I just put up a video also of JJ Marsh with his winning posing routine from the 1991 Pro Ironman. So check that out as well. All right, guys, before I let you go, I do want to read a couple articles. This first one comes from the March 1986 issue of Muscle Training Illustrated, which was Dan Lorry's magazine. And it's about one of our guests, Phil Williams. And this was right after Phil won the 1985 MPC Nationals overall. It says, never judge a book by its cover. A picture is worth 1,000 words. The two commonplace phrases seem to be opposites. One cautions against hasty decisions. The other encourages evaluation after a quick observation. Both sayings, however, seem to accurately apply to the reigning new MPC National Bodybuilding Champion, Phil Williams. Upon seeing Williams for the first time, one is impressed with his tremendous width and shape. At 5'7" and weighing as much as 220 pounds in the offseason, Williams established himself as one of the nation's fastest rising luminaries by emerging victorious in the San Jose at the toughest USA ever, and late in 85, plowing through the MPC Nationals muscle barriers. Williams has shoulders a yard wide and thighs that defy incarceration by anything smaller than pants of a double extra large sweatsuit. His waist, however, doesn't look like it knows the meaning of the word oblique, and the guy really gets the most mileage out of his aesthetic genetics. Yet Williams' rippling muscles are offset by a demeanor so mild that even renowned nice guys, the likes of Scott Wilson and Matt Mendenhall, come off like bullies and by comparison. Williams first knocked off his competitive career by flexing at the Teenage Mr. Mid-Continent contest in 1977 near his hometown in Kansas City, Missouri. In the early days of his iron pumping, Williams idolized Samir Benoud and Robbie Robinson. After moving out to the LA area, he met his idols as well as smaller stars in the galaxy and learned from their wisdom and mistakes. Probably the biggest mistake I made in the beginning was overtraining, Williams said. I used to think more meant better. But one thing I realized was that all the top men train and diet differently because they found out what their body responds to best. When it comes to making gains, this light heavyweight is one heavy lifter. Even his contemporaries are quick to praise his potential. Phil is of Black and Mexican ancestry and has the best genetics of both, said four-time national place winner Dean Tornabene. Richard Gaspari is damn lucky Phil Williams didn't enter the 1984 Nationals or he never would have seen Las Vegas, snarled Benny the Beast Pota. The beast fears no man, but I got to admit, I'm a little worried about going up against Williams. In spite of such praise, William keeps his skull on straight. At first, when I saw the results from New Orleans and then the World Championships, I wanted to kick myself, he said. I was afraid I wouldn't have been sharp competing in my third show in 3 months. Williams won the overall at the Amateur Grand Prix a week before the USA to qualify nationally. Less than a month after the Battle of New Orleans, however, Williams felt like jumping for joy after tying the knot with a Swedish heartthrob named Kina. The pair temporarily moved back to Sweden, and while living there, Williams cleared all obstacles, including Swedish heavyweight Christer Eriksson in winning the Open Mr. Europe contest in 1983. His victory at the 1985 Nationals and possibly the World Championships held in Sweden could probably mean that Williams might move back to Sweden where Phil would begin to set up shop as a professional in the sport. I think my best training was done in Sweden, Williams said with a wink. I'm more popular over there than in California. Maybe it's because in the LA area alone, there are so many outstanding bodybuilders, I sort of get lost in the shuffle. In getting tuned up for the Nationals, William trained at 5 different gyms. As 1984 Mr. USA, Williams had a few advantages, including being allowed to train where and when he wanted. He might catch a chest and arm workout in Ventura, bomb legs in Venice, and train shoulders and back in Santa Monica. This added the mental variety he needed to make Miami his platform playground. Every gym has some equipment that's better suited for certain body parts, so I try to be in the right place at the right time to get the most possible out of a workout, explained Williams. Five times a week, Williams beat a path to hardcore Doors twice a day. Morning sessions were shared with longtime friend David Burton, and evening workouts pumped solo. The pair worked well together, but also realized their different genetic blueprints made it necessary to spend bombing alone apart. Williams, for instance, did enough front thigh work to even make Tom Platz weak in the knees, but gives his biceps, traps, and calves kid glove care. I was trying to make my body as symmetrical as humanly possible, and that means adjusting for genetics, the champ said. Biceps, calves, and traps grow so easy that I have to take it easy to keep them under control. But my frontal thighs were the opposite. I had to really pay the price to bring them up to my other body parts. Williams usually banged away at the black weight with fantastical intensity at 9 a.m. and then again 10 or 11 hours later. Williams' front thigh workouts were his only session of the day as he set his quadriceps ablaze with back squats, vertical and angled leg presses, and hack squats. Biceps, on the other extreme, got hit directly once a week for a whopping four sets. Traps were skipped completely, and calves, I say calves, got treated to a pair of sets a week. Even when I was real young, my calves were big, the Midwesterner explained. As a kid, I couldn't pull my long white sweat socks over my calves. Williams' tremendous genetic lower leg endowment raises the ire of some of his past and present rivals, since many a national caliber bodybuilder's Achilles heel are weak calves, even though the guy may do to the muscle in the gym roughly what Sherman did at Georgia. And while his biceps, traps, and calves are mightily impressive, Williams' back is his trump card. Sharply detailed Terry's majors and minors tie into the rhomboiduses, and flaring lats taper toward the lumbar and spinal erectors. Yet this world-caliber back, which sent Lee Labrada and Gary Stridham packing in the class and overall pose downs at the USA, has been forged together by only 17 sets per week. Labrada got dumped again at it by the Nationals, much to his chagrin. When asked to evaluate the other 198ers that were on hand for the mayhem in Miami last October, Williams fell all over himself, blurting out compliments. Tom Terwilliger was tremendously impressive and aesthetic, a courageous sportsman. And Labrada was a maxi threat regardless of what class he was in, he said. When Moses Maldonado was put in front of him, Mr. Nice Guy pulled out all the stops. Moses is a great competitor who comes in ripped every time, he said. With 2 seconds and a first already at the Nationals, Moses has to be given a great deal of respect. I'm sure 1986 will be his year to make the American team again, but 1985 was mine. Fourth place was rough on him in Miami. He'll be back. But after Sweden, I hope I won't. Phil's pre-national workout, approximately. Monday, bench presses on the universal machine, 5 sets, 12, 10, 8, 6, 4 reps. Incline presses on the Smith machine, 5 sets, 12, 10, 8, 6, 4 reps. Front dips, 5 sets, 12, 10, 8, 6, 4 reps. Standing barbell curl, 2 sets, 12 to 8 reps. Seated alternate dumbbell curl, 2 sets, 12 to 8 reps. Close grip bench presses, 5 sets between 15 and 6 reps. Lat machine pushdowns, 5 sets between 15 and 6 reps. Barbell wrist curls at the end of a flat bench, 4 sets, 15, 15, 12, 12 reps. Standing reverse curls, 4 sets, 15, 15, 12, and 12 reps. Tuesday, back squats, 8 sets, 12 by 3, and then 10, 8, 6, 4, 2 reps. Vertical leg press, 4 sets, 15, 12, 10, 8 reps. 45-degree angle leg press, 6 sets, 15, 12, 10, 8, 6, 5 reps. Hack squats, 5 sets, 15, 12, 10, 8, 5 reps. On Wednesday, seated behind the neck presses, 6 sets, 15, 12, 8, 6, 4, and 8 reps. Dumbbell side laterals, 2 sets, 15 to 12 reps. Barbell front presses, 4 sets, 15, 12, 8, 5 reps. Nautilus rear delt flies, 4 sets, 20, 15, 12, 10 reps. Wide grip chins, 4 sets, 15, 12, 10, 8 reps. Close grip seated cable rows, 5 sets, 15, 12, 10, 8, 8 reps. Thursday, lying leg curl, 4 sets, 20, 15, 12, 10 reps. Standing leg curl on the Nautilus machine, 4 sets, 20, 15, 12, 10 reps. Barbell wrist curls, 4 sets, 15, 15, 12, 12 reps. Standing reverse curls, 4 sets, 15, 15, 12, 12 reps. Friday, same as Monday, only two sets of standing calf raises are substituted for the two sets of seated alternate dumbbell curls and two sets of barbell curls. And then Saturday is the same as Tuesday. On Sunday, lying leg curls, four sets, 30, 25, 20, 15 reps. Standing leg curls on a Nautilus machine, four sets, 20, 15, 12, 10 reps. Close grip T-bar rows, four sets, 15, 12, 10, 8 reps. Close grip front lat pulldowns, four sets, 15, 12, 10, 8 reps. And hyperextensions, four sets, 20 reps each set. All right. Awesome. Looks like Phil worked out every single day in preparation for that Nationals win. And if you've ever seen either the pictures or the video from that, Phil was in amazing shape. And he was also in amazing shape at the Universe, which I thought he should have beaten Joseph Romulus, but he was a little bit holding a little bit of water and Joseph beat him. All right, I got one more article for you. It's called Why I Like Male Bodybuilders by Lisa Lyon. I'm not sure where this was published, but friend Pat Comer, who is a friend of the show, sent it to us. And Pat always sends us some great articles and some great pictures. So it says, I was born in Southern California, the heartland of the physical culture movement. I spent my summers on Venice Beach, and unlike maybe 90% of the rest of the world, bodybuilders there never shocked me. I always found them beautiful, mysterious, like some strange new breed of animal, larger than life, and not average humans, better. Most people just don't get it, though. Some men felt threatened, women confused, both attracted and repelled. They reacted with fear to something they couldn't understand. I didn't wholly understand bodybuilders either, but the closer I came to the world of the male bodybuilders, the more I liked them. From the moment I entered the gym, cheap slurs of vanity and narcissism dissolved before the realities of physical discipline, work, and dedication. These men possessed more than the surface beauty of the muscular body. They were artists, willing to endure pain, isolation, and for some, poverty, to redefine the aesthetic of the masculine ideal. Beyond that, they were great guys. The camaraderie between training partners was sincere and moving. A genuine spirit of friendship and mutual support existed. The intensity of the training was balanced with energetic humor. The open, connected sensitivity of the body expressed itself in a natural appreciation of all things physical. While never satisfied, never resting, these athletes exuded a sense of peace. And I discovered a strange dimension of purity as well. There was a definite correspondence between the body and the mind. The power developed by bodybuilders, pitting their muscles against iron, evinced itself in their characters. The personal strength and positive attitude, the general level of health and vitality made these men inspiring to be around, encouraging and fun. Curiously, I found them to be free of many of the arbitrary social traits that define masculinity, more in touch with the real source of their basic manhood, living in an elevated state of total body awareness. They radiated a natural sexuality that charged their atmosphere. To watch them work, to see the sinew and muscles shine with sweat and swell with strain, there's no denying a desire to touch these bodies, to feel, as a woman, the contrasting hardness and hugeness that epitomizes the crude essence of the male animal. This integration of the physical and the psychic is not forced. It is a direct outgrowth of the sport and the art of bodybuilding at its highest level. It is the reason for my attraction to bodybuilding and the source of my respect, love, and gratitude for the men who, through bodybuilding, have revealed to me the possibility for the future development of the human race, its women and its men, to a new degree of perfection. Wow, what a great article. Lisa was an excellent writer, and I've never read an article like that where a woman really showed so much appreciation for the male bodybuilder. I like how she showed how they were artists. And she really appreciated the discipline and the work that goes into being a bodybuilder. Great article, Lisa Lyon. I would love to have Lisa on the show. So I'm going to look into that, guys. I'm going to try and find her. If I can find her somewhere, maybe Corey Everson knows about her. And I would love to have her on to get her opinion of her career. All right, guys, that is it. Next week, we'll be back with another good interview featuring Franco Santoriello and Eddie Robinson. These two guys were rivals back at the 1989 NPC USA Championships, and their rivalry goes all the way back to when they were teenagers, and Franco beat Eddie at the NPC Teenage USA Championship. So we're going to have them both back on the show together and see what they have to say. Should be fun. All right, guys, have a great workouts this week. Stay safe out there, and we will see you guys next week. Take care.